And I feel like every friend, every player I coached, every coach that I worked with, everyone's has helped me.
Coaches, welcome back again to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Coulter, starting off solo on this one as we jump into our catch-up with Nick Abdusevic from the Melbourne Tigers. Just a quick reminder to everyone, the Talking Split socials are there if you want them, at Talking Split on X, on Instagram, on YouTube. You'll be able to find all the information there. If you're looking for podcasts, drills, information, anything along those lines, they'll all be sitting there for you. This is our last episode for the year, so it's fantastic that we've been able to jump in with Nick Abdusevic from the Melbourne Tigers. So Nick recently just racked up his 25th year with Melbourne Tigers. He's been around there forever, and the amount of growth, effort, and work that has gone in Nick's space, in particular in that that Melbourne Tigers world, has been immense. So for those of you that aren't aware, and we'll get into it a little bit in the catch-up anyway, but Nick spent time with Melbourne, with Vic Metro, with Australian teams, at Big V level in Youth League, at Seaborn NBL1. Like, he's literally done it all the way through there. And not only really humble coach, but also a very caring and giving coach in that space as well, and has helped out countless players and coaches over the course of their careers and what that's looked like as well. Not only that, a genuine wealth of knowledge on all things basketball, and it's a really interesting chat to hear his views on basketball, what coaches can do, what players can do to improve, and you know what he has tried to create with Melbourne Tigers and where it can potentially go in the future as well. So this is our chat with Nick Abdusevic. All right, welcome back, everyone. Fantastic to be back in the old home of Victorian basketball here before the shift out to Wantirna itself. We're at Albert Park in the Melbourne Sports and Aquatic Centre. A little bit of a homecoming for you, Nick Mihai.
Yeah, a bit of a blast for the past. Good to be here.
Feels fantastic.
Yeah,
brilliant to have with us today, Nick Abdusevic. So Nick is the head of coaching at Melbourne Tigers for Melbourne Central Basketball Association. Has been in this role essentially for about 25 years. You've been tied in with Melbourne, Nick. Do you want to give us a little bit of like how it all started for you coming to Melbourne?
Hey, boys. Thank you for coming to MSEC and thank you for giving me opportunity to do this. Yes, it's been exactly 25 years in October since I've been with Melbourne Tigers. I started here as a coach in 2001 was my first season with the 16-3 boys. And since then, I had a role of coaching director for about 12 to 15 years. And recently, I am head of high performance for Melbourne Tigers and working full-time for MCBA.
Yeah, awesome. So you're the person that recruited Nick Mihai into the coaching ranks. So we have you to thank for this, I'm assuming?
Absolutely.
I think he was, I don't know if he recruited me. It was more he was stuck with me at the start. I kind of fell into his lap more than anything else, but yeah.
He had no choice.
Yeah, I did have no choice, yeah.
Play or coach. So for full transparency on this, like obviously, Nick, you were a Melbourne Tigers junior coming through. So that's how you know Nick, obviously. Like, Nick, we met through the state program, whatever year that was, 2011, I want to say off the top of my head, 12 yes. maybe, yep. Somewhere in there. Like, that's how I knew you, obviously, and had seen you coaching and all that sort of stuff around the place. It's like, who's that guy? Like, why does he look angry at his players all the time? But they still love him. Like, how does that even happen? And obviously did a lot of work with you in that sort of space and obviously got to know you quite well through the state program as well. But I mean, for those that don't know you well, not born in Australia, like you moved here, how did you get involved with basketball here? Like, do you want to sort of take us through how that happened to start off with?
Yes. So I arrived to Melbourne in December 1994, yep. Not knowing anyone here, didn't know how to speak English, yep. Still struggle with that. And it took me about 18 months to actually get involved in basketball here. Yep. That's when we moved, me and my family moved to Altona. I actually lived on a Queen Street, same street where Altona Stadium is. Yep. So that's how it all started. I started shooting around there and then I figured out that there was a tryout, which was October 1995. Yep. I was under 20s then. and got involved with their under-20s program. Stayed with Altona for a few years, went from under-20s to play in the VBA comp, which was the Wednesday night, which is similar to Big V Champ or NBL One nowadays. I still remember Melbourne Tigers at that time would bring the entire NBL squad to play against us. But I was never a great player, obviously, with my height. I was never going to be great, but I loved the game. I wanted to stay in a game. After a few years with Altona, I went and played at Keilor. Was lucky enough to be coached and played with Warren Escort, who was really great. At that time, we also had a coach come from France who sort of was very interesting to me. And after spending a few months with him, I really started thinking about coaching, got involved with some domestic teams at Altona, coached that for a few years. At that time, I also started doing some development off-season stuff with NBL Tigers down at North Melbourne. And I got my – I did my first ACL that year as well. So that sort of stopped me from playing basketball.
But the origin story for every coach ever.
And when he says first, that's never a good sign. When you start that with first ACL.
I've done three ACLs, unfortunately. never operated, which was probably the biggest mistake I've made. But that injury actually helped me get more involved with coaching. Started studying a little bit more, started getting more involved in learning about coaching. And one of my domestic players played rep basketball for Tigers, and his coach would come and watch our domestic games at Altona. His name is Henry Daigle. So Henry was the guy who gave me the opportunity to come to Melbourne Tigers. He was the one who kept pushing me and telling me that I have a pathway in coaching, and that's how I got involved. And then when I came to Tigers, between Henry and David Watson, there was a lot of opportunities, and I'm still here.
I tell you what, when you drop that name, Henry Daigle, I just had this massive flashback. I forgot all about him. Yeah. He was at Melbourne for years, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah. His son played here.
Yeah, his son was pretty good too.
He was a great mentor, great guy, played college basketball at Chico College, I'm pretty sure. I still have a book from like 1957, Chico Basketball, which was his book, which he gave it to me, I think in 99. Yep. Anyway, that's how I got involved.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. Like, and I mean, I suppose a lot of people do transition from playing into coaching, and it's a fairly normal one. Were there any sort of challenges you faced with that? Like going from I am a player into I'm a coach, and that kind of identity crisis, I suppose, between the two?
Not really. The only challenge that I faced was how do I do this for a living?
Yep.
You know, like I love basketball. I love playing. I always had a dream to be a full-time basketball player. Now I'm looking at being a full-time basketball coach. That was one thing that I never knew how to do. And I didn't really have a lot of people to talk to, because at that point of time, I don't think there was many full-time jobs in basketball outside maybe the NBL. Yep. So that was my biggest challenge. Obviously, I got married around that time as well, and making a living out of coaching basketball was the biggest challenge.
Yep.
But I didn't want to give up. I stayed involved. I somehow found the ways to get around it. I did a few other jobs next to basketball, but after 25 years, I'm a full-time basketball person.
That's an important point you make there. Yeah. Like, because, I mean, realistically, there's a lot of people that ask about pathways in particular and in that coaching space, and it's like, well, how can I become a full-time basketball coach? And the answer is never an easy one, because it's almost like you're about to shatter their hopes and dreams by saying, oh, look, it won't happen soon. Like, that's the big thing. Like,
correct,
it, it takes so long to get good at what you're doing to be in a position where it can be something full-time. And, I mean, coaching's difficult at the best time because there's very little security in coaching. Like, it's if you're a coach of a team and your team doesn't go well, you're not a coach of a team for much longer, you get moved on in that space. But there's a lot of people, I think, that do want it now. And it's like, yeah, okay. And that's fine. As a 19, 20-year-old, have goals, have aspirations, that's fine. But it can take that long to get there.
I think it's also the misconception of what a full-time coaching job is. I think we were speaking about it before, right?
Yeah, it's like not 9 to 5.
It's not 9 to 5. It's early mornings. It's late nights. And that's also right. Like, you know, 40% of it is you're behind the computer just making sure you're ticking off the admin, because it's really important. You're not always on the court like you think you are. So
yeah, no, look, I totally agree. And back in the day, there was a lot less opportunities. Yep. You know, we're talking 25, 30 years ago. It was a lot harder to find paid jobs in basketball, even if it was a casual or part-time, where today there's a lot more, you know, through a lot of people do individual skills, a lot of people work for different organizations that do, you know, school holiday camps, morning sessions, school basketball. None of this existed 25 years ago. So it is a little bit easier now to make living out of basketball, but 100%, you got to be patient. You got to do your time. The most important thing is not to skip steps. And that's what a lot of people try to do nowadays. For a lot of young coaches, I think it's more important to be full-time and get paid rather than do the craft, take the right steps, learn about the game, you know, become better at what you do later. But that's a challenge. Like, I was very patient, obviously, and I made sure that I don't skip those steps. But I'm not sure if anyone is prepared to wait that long to get into full-time.
What about when you say about skipping steps, what steps do you think that they're skipping as a result of that?
To me, it is very important that you see progress as a basketball coach on the court. So whether that's developing players, whether that's coaching a team and seeing progress with your athletes, whether that's winning titles, whether that's going and getting bigger opportunities. So, for example, I started playing at the low level. I started coaching at the low level. Then my success at that level gave me opportunities to coach better teams. Then I moved on and worked with Vic Metro, some Australian teams. So I feel like I've gone through every step, and each one of those was a challenge, which made me better. So I feel that I am ready now to coach at any level because of those experiences that I've had. I feel like a lot of coaches nowadays would prefer to maybe skip coaching VJBL basketball and go into a senior basketball or similar. So I strongly believe that being part of these steps is really, really important.
And it's a difficult one to get people to understand as well, because they might have that initial burst of success but not know how to sustain that over a period of time. Like, I mean, let's face it, our basketball year is a long year. Like, that's normal. But the ebbs and flows of that season, unless you are experienced, you may not know how to navigate that. And all of a sudden, what seemed really good maybe 4 weeks in, you can get to week six and all of a sudden the sky has fallen because everything's gone wrong because you haven't navigated something that you just haven't had the experience doing. And
correct.
The experience is a good thing. Like, and I'm just trying to find the right words to hit on this, but the best learning you can get is to make mistakes in a failure-free environment, which is coaching lower teams, generally speaking. Like, there's still enough talent there that you get to work with. There's still kids that care. There's still parents that care. You still get to coach. You're just not quite in the high-pressure environment somewhere else, so that when you do go to that, now it's like, oh, I've been here before.
Yes.
Like, I've seen this already.
And that level as well gives you a higher amount of repetitions, because yeah, the higher you go up, the less games there are, the less repetitions you get. So, yep, like, you know, repetition, you can't replace them. That's what you speak about all the time, Rob.
Yep.
You know,
and it's tough.
It's the challenges, right? Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter what level of basketball it is, you'll have different challenges. My coaching 16-5 team is, in a way, no different to coaching MBL 1. You will have challenges. And that's what you learn going through those experiences. And I really think that without having experiences at different levels, you will struggle to be a successful coach. Now, I could be wrong, but that's how I see it.
Yep. I think it's the great Charles Barkley book, I Might Be Wrong, But I Doubt It. Like, I feel like that's played a part here.
I was just going to say that it also applies to when you're doing interviews. Like think of it the same way, right? Like, you're going to get told no more times than you're going to be told yes with basketball interviews. But the ones where it's no is where you get your ability to learn and grow, not when you get told yes, because you're just probably excited you've been appointed something, right? But when you get told no, like, that's why you need to do more of them and as many as possible. Like, the same thing applies to basketball, right? Like, you're going to fail more times than you probably succeed, and the only way to do that is to get repetitions at that lower level and build your way up. Yeah,
that's the word, repetitions. And obviously, the more you coach, the better you get. The more challenges you face, the better you're going to be, more you can grow. So, yeah, look, I know it's difficult to be patient. I think in today's world, that is one of the major issues we have, not only with coaches but with players as well. We're dealing with the same situation with young players who, you know, everyone wants to be on the first team, everyone wants to be in a state team, everyone wants to be in a national team.
I reckon it's even worse now. I reckon there's under 16s kids going, why aren't I in the youth league squad? I think it's gotten worse.
Right.
It's just like, what?
Yeah, it feels like everyone wants to get to the top without doing their time.
Yep.
And I think time is important.
Yep. Are there times where, a little bit of a tangent, there are times where you have seen someone fast-tracked and it worked in that sort of space? Like, because you think about a lot of the players that have come through Melbourne Tigers over the years, been a lot of talent, obviously, but does fast-tracking people, I mean, that's coaches or players, work ever?
I think it has. I think it has. And, you know, one example is at times, and sorry, most of the times, we are forced to take tall kids and put them into a better teams. Now, if you look at their skill level, they might not be up to it, but because they have length and the team that we are picking has no height, sometimes some of those tall players do get put ahead. And I have seen positives comes out of that because they spend 12 months training and playing with the really good players. And they also get better coaches.
Yep.
So there has been times where that's been a positive as well.
Yeah. It's funny because I was literally, as I was driving in here this morning, I was listening to a podcast with Ricky Ponting on it, the former Australian cricketer. And they were asking him what made him such a good leader. And he's like, well, I always played out of my age group. Like, when I was under 13s, I was playing under 17s. When I was under 15s, I was playing under 19s. Like, that's just kind of how it rolled. He's like, but because of that, leadership positions didn't find him. Like, he was always the youngest in the team, so they were never going to make him captain or anything like that. He's like, but what I did work out pretty quickly, that if I was the best trainer, that was me leading without the title of leader, so to speak, in that space.
Lead by example.
Yeah, and it really was. He's like, I didn't realise at the time how much that was driving other people around me to get better, because it's like, hey, if that 13-year-old kid in their under-17s competition is here first, finishes last, works the entire time, we all get better because of it. And it was a real fascinating insight into someone that probably was fast-tracked, you know, playing out of his age group and those sorts of things, but fast-tracked the right way. And clearly there was a mentality that went with that it's like, hey, this kid is going to survive. There was obviously ability, technique and all those kinds of things, but the mental side of things as well. And it's interesting because, I mean, you make mention of it, the taller kids do tend to get fast-tracked a little bit. Like, it's not unusual. Like, I still remember one of my tryouts where a tall kid walked in the building and it's like, he's in the ones, like, straight off the bat. Like, I haven't even seen him run up and down the court. And gradually over the course of the session, it's like, oh, no, he's in the twos. Oh, no, might be the threes. He's finishing in the fours. But you get excited straight away and you sort of think, oh, you know, what could we turn, you know, help this kid turn into? in that sort of space. But you know, you genuinely cannot beat reps. And I think that's just like if you're looking for a cheat code, that's the cheat code. Get more reps when you can.
And basketball discriminates as well. Nick, you had a phrase that I still use today. If we pick the 10 best players, we would just pick 10 point guards. But that's not how basketball works. And that's a reality. That's why we have to fast track certain players in certain positions because
absolutely,
you know, that's just how it works. Like, yeah, there's nine other guys or girls that are probably better than this player, but you know, they're 6 inches taller than you. Like, that's just you know, that's the elephant in the room.
At some point, it changes.
Yeah,
like there will always be a talented tall athlete, and now you can't deal with it with your 10 point guards.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're a champ. Like you'll figure it out. Obviously, somehow how to compete, but you know, it's not easy.
No.
In that world.
And look, there has to be some sort of talent identification when it comes to those players, whether that be a small or a big. And if you are talented and if you have potential, then yes, obviously, you can fast track some of that development stuff. So it's different situations. I think it's slightly different with players to coaches. I still feel that as a coach, I have to go through those scenarios where I make decision. And if I am to go and coach straight away at the higher level, I'll probably have to be an assistant coach or development coach for many, many years before I get a gig, where I feel like being a head coach at the lower level will give me the better prep for later on.
Yep.
But while doing that, I think it's very important that you're surrounded somehow with the quality people. So when I came to Melbourne, I was very lucky. Like I had at our club, we had Ray Tomlinson, Alan Vestover and Lindsay Gaze coaching juniors. So after I finished my session with my 16 threes, I made sure that I stayed and watched their session. Yep. And that was really like my first step of developing. I would spend 4 to 6 hours on a Sunday just watching these guys work. Like I'm talking 2-3 years in a row.
Yep.
Again, I was very lucky to have these people on the court next to me.
Yeah, I was going
to
say it's one hell of a VJBL.
Yeah.
Coaching lineup that's been rolled out.
But I made sure I was there. Like, I made sure I stayed and watched. And it's the message that I'm trying to pass on to my coaches in the program today. Like, you know, we are, again, lucky to have a lot of very good coaches at our junior program. And I'm trying to encourage coaches to stay and watch sessions and see how these more experienced coaches operate.
Were you around when Ken Watson was still coaching?
I came in Ken Watson's last year.
Yep.
I remember he was on court 7 at MSAC with under 12 boys in my last season. So when I coached 16 threes, he was in his last year with under 12 ones.
Yep. Crazy. That's how long you've been here for a start. Like
for those who don't know those names, though, they're like the Mount Rushmore of coaches at Melbourne.
Genuinely are. And not just Melbourne, Victoria.
Yeah.
Like it is, you know, the impact they've had. Like we've still got a Watson room at Basketball Victoria at the moment. We've also got a Gaze room, which again links very heavily to Melbourne Tigers. But I just want to backtrack a little to a point you made there, like going down and coaching a team as opposed to fast-tracking into a first team. The amount of additional coaching you have to do in those lower teams because the players don't understand it yet, they aren't good enough to just kind of, I don't want to say cut a corner, but they aren't good enough to kind of work things out for themselves. So you have to coach that. I actually think that's a really good thing.
Yes.
Like going back and like it sounds dumb. The most coaching I ever had to do in my life was when I was coaching a 12-5 boys team.
Yeah.
Because those kids were lunatics. They ran around like they loved it and all that sort of stuff. But they didn't know a thing. So my job was to try and coach them as much as possible. The least amount of coaching I ever did was the year I actually coached against you, Nick, with like the 16s. It's like, well, I had a good team. There were times where I could literally sit there mute on the sidelines and it's like, look, talent will override here.
We kind of coached one game that year.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a grand final.
When we played against each other and it's like, oh, okay, we're on here. But every other time it's like, oh, look, eventually we're probably going to run over the top of this team. And I felt my coaching stalled as a part of that because it's like, well, I'm not getting any better here. I'm not getting the challenge that I need to get. Whereas if I went down and coached lower teams with probably less talented athletes, I reckon I would have got better. Because now you've got to try and read the game a little more. You've got to try and find the little cracks where it's like, hey, I can just get into that with maybe the, my backup big can exploit this as opposed to, oh, I've got the starting four man for the state team. Cool. They'll figure it out.
Yeah,
like it just changes so much.
And that's what makes you a better coach.
It
You've gone through those different challenges in basketball. And then after 5, 10, 15 years, you know, you're ready to deal with pretty much anything that comes your way.
Yep.
That's where coaching 12-5, 16-5, 16-1, state teams, they're all different challenges, but they're very good challenges in order to help us prepare for what's next.
I think everything – like nothing should be above you. That's really the point we're trying to kind of make, or Nick, you're probably trying to make as well, right? Nothing is above you. Like I even, I was about 4 or 5 years ago, I coached preps. I think it was, I want to say like Melbourne Grammar or something. I don't know. It was something, but I was coaching preps down there and I go, all right, everyone jump on the baseline. So what do you think they did? Yep, ran to the baseline, started jumping up and down. I go, okay, oh, stop jumping. It's like, so it made me realize on reflection, I need to work on my language when I talk to kids because they're obviously, I'm not clear enough with preps. I'm not clear enough with under 18s or anything above that. So like it's really important to understand the different levels as well and take some learnings out of it that can apply into multiple age groups as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's massive. So who are the people that have had the biggest impact on you as a coach? Like you've mentioned a couple of people already, but who had the genuine biggest impact on you as a coach?
Like I said early on, there is, you know, Henry Daigle. There is, obviously, when I came to the club, I knew about Lindsay. So, you know, Paul was at that stage with us at the club as well. I spent a lot of time and a lot of hours talking to him about the game of basketball. He was a big mentor. Outside Tigers... early on, I spent a lot of time with my friend who's no longer with us, Eddie Kalik. So he was one of my mentors, especially when it comes to communicating with players and teaching skills. I felt like he was one of the best that I've ever seen when it comes to that department. And then obviously I had some later on as I was more involved in basketball, I had some, you know, great mentors at Vic Metro, Al McCautry, David Crow, Guy Malloy. And then obviously as the time went on, I became a really good friend with Andrew Gaze. You know, so just picking the brains out of different people that have played or coached at different levels, I was using that to get better at my craft. I feel like I am a mix of all of these people. I have stolen and taken, whether it's a saying or coaching style or a drill, from every one of them. But I really go deep into listening when they talk. And when they coach, and when they're on the floor with the players. So during my first 10, 15 years of coaching, I was really good at listening and trying to see how people deliver the messages. And those messages, when players are all of a sudden engaged, I try to really pay attention to those and build my coaching around that. So yeah, look, there's so many. I've probably missed some names, and I do apologize if I did. But because I've been around for a long time, there's been a lot of people that I have actually worked with, and I feel like every friend, every player I coached, every coach that I worked with, everyone's has helped me to get better. Everyone's been my mentor. Everyone in some way has helped me. I will remember coaching in my youth league for the first time in 2006, and Nick was part of this team. I felt that there was players on that team who knew our offensive structure better than me. And I'm being honest. And, I I learned from them. Yeah. There was few players in that team that have spent some time playing junior basketball with Al Vestova, and those groups were just incredible when it comes to our shuffle offense. So I actually spent almost my entire 2006 learning from those guys, yep. Tweaks and special plays and how to go about things. So my message is like, you know, you have to continue to study and learn in order to get better. And your mentor is everyone that is around you. I think, you know, you can learn every time you're on the floor, every time you're listening to a podcast, watching a video, watching a clinic. There's always something that you can take away from that. And I've been huge on that.
Yeah. So you travel back to Europe every now and again to visit family and all that sort of stuff. What do you do when you're there in the basketball space? Because I know that's a part of the reason why you go back as well, is not all family time. Sometimes there's basketball stuff in there as well. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, look, we go back to Europe every 18 months. Yep. So it's one winter, one summer. While 90% of the time I spend is about family and visiting friends and spending time with my wife and my daughter, I also take time to do some basketball, or sport, should I say.
Yep.
Because I have a huge fan in my hometown in Europe. Is my wife's uncle, who used to coach national volleyball team. His brother lives in Gold Coast, so Nick Mihai spent some time with me in 2007 doing a preseason.
Yeah, it's still tattooed on my brain, Nick.
Yeah, so his brother is an ex volleyball national coach, and he's 85 now. But I would spend hours and hours sitting down and listening to his stories around training, development, and how do they go about coaching. Other times I would spend running some basketball camps and being involved on the floor with the local teams. I make sure that there is at least one or two trips to a EuroLeague game, especially when I go in winter. Yep. Any basketball clinics that I can get. And one of my best friends, who was my teammate at Kilo back in, 2001, is an assistant coach for German national team. And to cut the long story short, he was involved in current European championships where the head coach, a Spanish guy, got sick. So he got promoted to a head coach position, coached the team for the three or four games before the head coach came back. When the head coach came back, didn't feel well, and he said, look, I'm better off sitting back and assisting you. So my friend Al got an opportunity to win a European championship with the Germany this year. So he's a guy that I spend a lot of time chatting on weekly basis, and then obviously when I visit him in Germany, yep. I make sure that you know I get my craft up to speed after chatting with him. So look, all my European trips are obviously family first, but I make sure that there's yep. basketball and sport involved.
Incredible story. Like how yeah. many people would know that the German national team was just coached by an ex Melbourne Tigers coach?
Yes,
like it's one of those things that, you know, unless you were around at the time, you probably didn't realise it. Like I remember talking to Dave Peters about it. I said, oh, because I heard the same story. I'm like, oh, did you know that, you know, this? Because I think he was coaching the 19s at that stage, was it? Like the junior team?
Yes, he coaches 16s, 18s, 17s, yeah. 90s. He looks after all of their junior
yeah.
National teams.
I remember yeah. talking to him. I'm like, oh, you know, your Tigers guy is coaching the team. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, how long were you at Melbourne? Like, I would have thought this would have been your era, and it was before him as well. And it's a crazy story, but it's amazing how many people can relate back to like the Melbourne Tigers being almost the centerpiece for a long time of basketball in Victoria. And mean, phenomenal history with Melbourne Tigers alone. Like that in itself is incredible. How closely linked, I suppose, is the shuffle? And, you know, we talk about the shuffle all the time, and it's almost seen as they're just a shuffle club. And it's kind of sort of dismissed, I suppose, at times. And, you know, early on, I was one of those where it's like, look, I probably don't understand it well enough to know it, so I'm not going to buy into this. And then I worked with you on a state team, and it was kind of when Guy Malloy was rolling through with state teams as well. And, you know, he was obviously a big shuffle coach at the time. Like, he'd learnt it, you know, again, through Melbourne Tigers stuff from everyone. And it wasn't until I saw you teach it, it's like, oh, I get it. Like, this now makes a lot of sense to me as to what, why, how, and everything that goes with it. Like, how central, I suppose, is the shuffle to the culture piece of Melbourne Tigers?
Oh, it's huge. Yeah. It's massive. Unfortunately, I feel like it's dying a bit.
Yep.
With all the young coaches coming into the club and getting involved who don't have playing history with us, it takes a bit of time for us to get them to that level. But it's massive. Like, I've been, you know, in love with shuffle from day one, and I faced a lot of challenges. I probably lost some opportunities in basketball because I was a shuffle guy. But to me, it is something that I believe in. I strongly believe that it can develop players, and I know that that's been one of the arguments over the years, where players are robotic and they only play certain spots and only do certain things. It can be an unbelievable weapon if you know it really well, if your players buy in, and if you know how to coach it. Yep. Like, obviously, there is 700 different options with shuffle, but, you know, you talk about your first and thirds and reverse as, you know, the main shuffle starting points, and if you only stay at those, yes, your players do become robotic. Yes, it does look like it's an action that we go from A to B to C just to get something out of it. But if you actually know how the system operates, you know, one of the strengths is you as a coach can control where the shots are coming from. So talking about the destination shots, especially when you need them, whether it's late in a game or you know, if we haven't scored in a while, you can take an action that is going to give a certain player a shot. You can get into your ISOs. There is so many counters. There is you can be in such a control as a coach and as a team that it just takes basketball to the next level. Is it difficult? Yes. Does it take time? Absolutely. If you look at the Tigers junior program, for example, 90% of our teams are better after February, March, April, because that's when it really starts kicking in. So if you have some patience and if you believe in the structure, it's a great offense, just like there is other, you know, great offenses as well. Like, I'm not saying that shuffle is the best offense, but it's just something that I believe can help players, can help teams, can help coaches. But I just love basketball in general. Like, watching the Nationals, for example, in the last few years, I feel like everyone is running the same thing. Yep. Where when I was involved a few years ago, it was the exciting part about coaching a Nationals to me was that I had to figure out how to guard different systems, because every coach was bringing something different. One coach was, you know, playing fast-paced basketball. Next coach will be into flex. This guy will be into triangle. Next guy will be a zone guy. And everyone was doing something different, and that was very challenging. Where I feel like today, a lot of people play very similar basketball. Yep. Now, I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm not saying that's not how it should be. It's just different. So, yeah, look, I still strongly believe in shuffle. Only recently we had a huge success with our NBL one-man's team. Mm-hmm. Andrew obviously runs a shuffle offense. He runs it with a lot of different tweaks, and it's not your basic first, thirds, and reverse, but, you know, he's got a lot of different options there. But it just shows that it still can be successful at any level if the players buy in.
I think the other point, the benefit of the shuffle, like for me personally, is not so good players can play up into teams as a result of it. Like, I didn't feel like I was ever really like pigeonholed, like you're here or here, but I could play up to it. Like, I was okay, I think, as a basketball player. But because of the shuffle, it allowed me to make decisions in an environment where things are still moving for me off the ball. So, like, it gave me a sense of comfort as well. So that's kind of the benefit as well when you're a little bit like you're trying to find your identity when you're younger. That's where the shuffle really benefits, because you can play in positions and then you can move into different positions as you get older as well.
Yeah, well, there's role clarity.
Yeah.
I think that comes, like, you know what your job is, like, regardless of what your position on the floor is, you know what everyone else will be doing at that point in time. And it's, yeah, okay, there's some challenges to it at times, but that's part of the growing process. Like, you're not going to have your team click cohesively straight away. It's going to take time to work out who fits best where, you know, what options are our better ones. And, like, I must admit, like, I was, like, my first real exposure to the shuffle was through the state program. Like, that was where I probably got my first little bit of a look into it. And I remember I was talking to Zoe about it, and she's like, ah, shuffle. I'm like, yeah, I get it. I'm like, but trust me, come and watch one of these sessions. Like, it's worth a look. And you were head coach at the time, Nick. Like, I'm like, come and have a look, see how it's taught, see why it's taught a certain way. And, like, she walked out of there, she's like, I'm on. Like, I'm a believer now. Like, I get it. And I think part of it was, one, how you taught it, but two, why you taught it certain ways and the layerings that come with it, with, hey, we're not moving on to this until we've got this down because this matters. The alignment of, hey, you know, basket, elbow, point guard, like these type, like all the little real art of coaching things. Like, if we talk about art of coaching, and a lot of times now coaches are told get out of the player's way and let them make decisions. And it's like, well, yeah, you can still do that. There's still space for both though. Like, it's, you can still let players make decisions, but you still coach the players to get to that decision in the first place. And I think that was one of the things where I felt my coaching went up a level when I actually started coaching in shuffle, because now there were so many more things I had to think about, the layering, the teaching, the timing, all of that stuff changed for me straight away. And I think it made me a better coach coming out of it. And it's like, if I had a team now, would I run shuffle exclusively? Probably not. But I reckon I'd probably still have a thirds and a reverse in there in some space.
Yeah.
And then you start to get into all the little counters and the tweaks and those sorts of things. And that's the real fun stuff.
Yeah.
Like, now you can start to like, that's the coaching. Like, now you start to work out. Because someone asked me, I can't think who it was. Someone asked me, they're like, oh, did you enjoy your time in shuffle? I loved it. Like, I really enjoyed it. And I think part of it was because I was working with you, Nick. Like, it was how you coached it and how you taught it as well. I'm like, but I've never seen anyone control a game like Nick did. Like, it was just one of those things where he knew what was coming. He knew what offense to run. He knew what the counter would be. He knew what their counter would be. So he knew what his counter to their counter would. Like, it was that sort of thing where it bounced out over time.
Yeah.
And that was the fun stuff.
Yeah. Like, and it looks, takes time to get to that level.
Of course, yeah.
Both as a coach and as a player. But I think other benefits are, like, it connects the group. If I'm a star player and I need to get a shot, I rely on other four guys doing their job. Because if they don't set a good screen, if their timing is not good, if their passing is not good, I don't get a shot. I don't get my one-on-one. So I think it's very team-orientated offense. Again, there is other offenses that are as good as that. Yep. But I think that's the benefits out of it. Plus, you know, with all the breakdowns and everything that we do to get ready for the game situation, you're really working on your skills, whether that be a pick and roll, cross screens, coming out off the two, you know, whatever that might be. It's a game situation play. I love it. I feel like there needs to be, at our program anyway, there needs to be someone, you know, that carries that tradition from Watsons and Gazes into the next generations. I absolutely love it. I believe in it. I trust it. And I think it's a great tool for coaches to have. You could be a fast-paced coach. You might love your fast breaks, and that's all good. But there is certain times in the game when, you know, your team hasn't made a shot on, I don't know, six trips in a row, or, you know, do we need a quick shot? What do we do once we come off the middle on ball? How do we spend 15 seconds, you know, on the court before we take a shot? There is different game situations, and that's where a structure can help. And as Nick mentioned, also coaching lower teams sometimes, when you don't have a lot of skill, when you don't have a lot of talent on a team, this will help. You know, this will help as well. So, look, I like I said, you know, like I trust it. I love it. I wish I have more opportunities to coach. Unfortunately, with my current role, I don't coach a team, which is the negative part. I really miss coaching teams, and I'd love to see myself on the court with the team on regular basis, going through this stuff. And going back to NBL One, this season, Andrew was called to go and commentate some FIBA games.
Yep.
And I had the opportunity to step in and spend some time with those players a few weeks ago in the semi-final against Knox. And let me tell you, like, it felt so good. Yep. Just being on the sideline, calling the shots, and just being in a change room with the guys, I really do miss it.
It's kind of playing down how big that game was. It was, it was a big win too, like tight game all the way through. That was awesome. That was, that was a really cool game to watch too.
What was, I felt the coolest thing was there were so many Melbourne Tigers juniors in that game.
Yeah.
Like still playing. Like, I mean, I coached against the Von Hoff, Wilson era coming through, and it's like it's really cool to see those guys back in.
Yeah.
But I think you made mention of it as well, Nick, like it was really cool to see how many Melbourne people went down to Dandenong for that game that, you know, were Melbourne Tigers people for years, and it's like, this is a team I can get behind and support as well.
It was just incredible. Yeah. Seriously, like the support that this team had throughout those finals was unbelievable, and it just felt like every game we went down by 18 against Kilsyth in a quarterfinal, and we came back to win. Then we had a one or buzzer beater win against Knox, and then that gets us to the grand final where I reckon 60% of the crowd would have been Melbourne Tigers community. Yep. It was just amazing to see that. We haven't seen that since NBL days. Yeah. So what Andrew and those boys did last season was huge for the club.
But it wasn't just the young kids that were there.
Oh, God, no.
So I came to the game, and there was even some parents of kids that I coach, and they're getting photos with me with my son because they haven't seen me in like 10 years.
Yeah.
And it was just really cool to see like the connection of people that have been probably barracking for Melbourne since like the 80s. Like there was the old school, you remember the old school
like with the yellow jackets?
Oh, unreal. Yeah, I was really jealous they were ripping those jackets out, but yeah.
Was there any, I suppose, fear going into that game for you as well? Like you weren't the head coach of the team all year, but you were for that game, and it's like, it's not even as if you had a double chance, and it's like, oh, if we lose this one, you know, at least Drew, we can come back and coach them for the rest of us. Like, no, this is me, this is a season on the line. Like, how did you deal with that?
No, it was easy. I said to myself...
Well, as long as it was easy.
No, it was. Listen, I said to myself, if we lose, I'll just blame Andrew and say he didn't prepare the team very well. And if we win, it's going to be all me.
The art of coaching.
The art of coaching.
No, I'm joking, of course. Look, obviously there's nerves before every game. But because I work with those players... Over the years, we had 9 ex-Tigers or current and ex-Tiger juniors. Then Fuzzy's been with us for a while. I also coached him at the state level. And the other two kids I sort of knew, whether it was something to do with them in the past or this season. I felt like going into that game, it was an exciting opportunity for the club, and that's all I had on my mind. Like seeing that community behind us at Kilsyth, and seeing that crowd coming in to Dandenong Stadium, one thing on my mind, and I just kept telling the boys, we just got to do this for the club. So honestly, look, there was no fear. It was excitement, nerves, but once the game started, it was all about enjoying it. Yep. and encouraging the boys to do their thing. That was it, really, because I didn't really do too much other than tell them to stick to what they do best, and just encouraging them that they need to get this thing done for us. Yep. But something that I will remember for a long time, it was a really great opportunity and great feeling at the end when we got that win.
Yep.
So yeah, I was glad to be part of that. Yeah.
A little bittersweet the next week, having to go play Sandringham with Dane Pinot, like one of Melbourne Tigers' faithful on the other team.
They pop up everywhere,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah.
Tom is our ex junior as well, so there was quite a few ex Tigers players there. Look, going into that game, we knew that we had to deal with probably the best team in the league. Yep. And they showed that in the second half. We had moments in the first half where we played really well, just didn't have enough consistency throughout the game. Didn't really help us, having me coming in and then having Andrew come back and coach the group. Andrew wouldn't feel like he prepared the team the way he wanted to, because he only arrived back to Melbourne, I think, a day before the game. So it was a tough situation for him. But look, credit to the boys. It was an amazing season, one to remember. And, we're trying to put a pretty good group again for next season, and hopefully we can do it again.
Yeah, awesome. I want to touch on your Vic Metro era, that you're involved with that. Probably had one of the best Vic Metro teams, I think, has ever been put on the floor when you look at calibre of players, but it didn't finish the way you wanted to. And the next year, I was on staff with you, and like I remember looking at the two teams, and it's like, this team that we're taking away is not what you took away last year. Like, vastly different in terms of talent level and those sorts of things. But the ability to get everyone on the same page, like, I was really impressed with, like, in terms of just how you handled that group in particular. Like, what are your recollections of that group that when I was coaching with you as well? Because, of course, it's about me in this sort of space. But, that was a very young group when we look at it. And it's like the group
six,
that...
bottom age, I think.
Maybe even seven. Yeah. Like, I think at that stage. And we only took 10 to the tournament at that point. But, yeah, what are your recollections about, like, that group, given they were such a young group coming through?
Yeah. Look, that was my second year as a head coach. Like you said, the year before in Perth was my first year, and I learned a lot.
Yep.
While 2011 team that failed to win the gold was a lot more talented, a better team, stronger team, I felt that I learned a lot as a coach.
Yep.
And I remember my meeting with Ross Wignall after the loss, where I said to him, it's like, maybe I went too early to a head coaching position, because I only assisted one season with Al before that. And he said, nope, we trust you, we want you back. Just got to learn from your mistakes. And I went home thinking, okay, what do I do? And it's setback, So you go like, what do I do now? We tell our players to never stop, never give up, and when you make a mistake, it's all about what you do next. So I spent 3 months thinking about this and figuring out what do I need to do. Like, it's easy to say, like, you coach a Vic Metro or a national team and you get access to the best players, but it's not all about that. Talent sometimes is not enough. And I feel that big part of why we didn't win in Perth is my fault, and how I coached and how I selected the group. And it took me some time after that to figure out what to do next. So going into the next tryouts with Mick Metro, it was all about selecting players that I believe can play for me. it wasn't about selecting the best team. It was about, like I said, knowing that I can coach these guys, selecting players that I think would believe in what I bring to the table, would play for me. And that was the case. You know, we selected six or seven bottom age kids, and we had some tough games.
Yeah.
I remember day two where we had 2 1-point wins.
Yep.
We lose those two games, we probably don't make the semis or quarters back in the day.
I don't think there were quarters back then.
Like, yeah, it was straight into the semis. Yeah. Yeah, correct. So we probably would have finished third.
Yep.
But it was like, you know, again, it was learning from mistakes. It was experience. It was, if I was assistant coach with that 2011 team, I probably wouldn't have learned as much as I did as a head coach. So it goes back to what I was saying before, going through those stages and experiencing those things and then getting better at it. So two teams, 2012-2013, I sort of went and said, like, look, I just got to select the group that I think I can coach, the group that I think can buy into what I'm delivering.
Definitely.
Yeah, and we've had some, yeah, great success.
Well, even the year after, like I wasn't on your staff the next year with the 18s. But looking at that team that you took to Canberra as well, and it's like a lot of the guys you had from the year before, obviously. Yeah. But, I mean, they were conditioned. Like they were, that was a world
like a machine.
It really was. Like it's, there was only one game that I thought, geez, they might be in a little bit of trouble here, which was against New Zealand, I think it was.
Yes.
That might have been a quarter at that stage. I think they might have come in that year.
Yeah.
Where I thought, geez, this quarterfinal's not ideal. Like I think it might have been Matt Freeman was like the New Zealand's best kid. And it's like, geez, he was very good.
Mm.
I thought, geez, if they get over this, like there's no stopping. And they didn't. Like they just, they rolled through and smacked everyone, I think, from that point. But like, that was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah,
as well. Like they were a good group.
No, look, some of my best times in coaching are with Vic Metro. I really enjoyed it. I love the program, even today.
Yep.
I follow it. I watch the games and I keep in touch with a lot of guys that are involved with Basketball Victoria. It's something that, you know, I really enjoy doing, but at the same time I learned a lot. Like, you know, I remember coming out of Vic Metro years and going into the Siebel as a head coach. I was ready. I definitely was.
Yep.
That helped me get to that next level. So again, you know, coaching juniors, low levels, coaching juniors, high level, Vic Metro, then going into the seniors, I felt like I had taken the right steps or correct steps to get to that level.
No, definitely.
But yeah, Vic Metro is something that will stay with me forever.
Is seven bottom ages, is that a record to win a gold medal?
I was just thinking about, as we were talking, it's like, I reckon it was six.
I think it was
maybe six.
Yeah, I think
was
six.
It?
I think six. The top ages were Fraser Pearce, Michael Wern, Lockie Anthony, and Jeremy McKay. Oh, okay, maybe
yes,
five.
Yes, five.
Five.
Yeah, five bottom age.
Marek Toman, I've forgotten about
Marek. Yeah. I just thought about it as well. Definitely five, yeah.
Yeah, so... look, fun, and don't get me wrong, the bottom ages were no slouches. Like it's, you know, cool. Jock Perry, Tom Wilson.
DJ
Vasiljevic, Abby Akintola. And I've gone blank on the last kid. I knew I would.
Not always.
Was it always? Was it Blake Allison? Actually, I don't reckon it was either.
No, Blake never made my teams.
Yeah.
It was always, I think.
I thought it was.
Might have been.
I thought always went with him.
Potentially was.
I should
or was
know.
It Seb?
I should.
Lemonado.
Seb.
Seb Laminato right, yeah. was the other one. Yeah. Yeah, very good players. Like, don't be wrong. Like, it's not as if Nick's picked a bunch of kids out of Aussie Hoops and just thought, hey, let's go to under-18s with them. Like, they were still pretty good.
Correct.
But they were coached to be pretty good as well. Like, and there was some talent there. But there was some, it was a good competition that year. Like, Jonah Bolden was playing for New South Wales.
Some really good coaches too.
Yeah, Shula had Tasmania, I think, from memory.
Yeah, Shula had Tasmania. Guy Malloy had Vic Country.
He did too, yeah, you're right.
Mark Watkins was on the bench as a mentor coach, I think, for New South Metro. Yeah.
It was a good year. Don't we? Like, there was some talent at that tournament in particular. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun by the same time.
Oh, great fun.
Like
it's, great fun.
You know, they were the enjoyable ones. I've had more Nandos with Nick than I reckon even Zoe. Like, it's, you know, it was almost like we trained down at Albert Park College. I'd be like, hey, session starts at 1:30. Cool. Nando's at 12. I was like, all right, cool. Like, this is just what it is.
Absolutely.
Like,
love my Nando's.
But yeah, like, that was the fun stuff. But that is also the stuff you remember as well. Like, you remember the tournament. Like, the tournament mattered. And, you know, that was a lot of fun. But you remember the stuff, hanging out with the staff. Like, it was the two of us, Dave Crow. Dave Peters was a development coach who's now the high performance coach for Vic Metro. Mark Sainsbury was the team manager, and he's still the team manager.
Still like
the
it's manager,
for everyone.
It does feel that way. Like, it's, but you know, that's the fun stuff that you do forget about at times. But they were the fun moments as well.
Absolutely.
Like, it's I still remember training on, like, it wasn't quite New Year's Day, but it was very close to New Year's Day. It was before we went to East Coast Challenge down at Albert Park.
Me,
and it would have been like 40 degrees in there, and it's just like, oh, this is what we do. Like, it's, there's no excuses for it or anything like that. It's like, oh, you're hot here, wait until you go to East Coast. And like, that old Hills Hornet Stadium is the hottest gym I reckon I've ever been in my life.
Including our accommodation.
Yeah, exactly right. Like, but even then, like, and I've just thought of it then, like, we were flying up. We didn't realise, we hadn't looked at the tickets correctly. So we were flying up to East Coast. And I'm like, well, I definitely hadn't looked at the ticket correctly. I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to Melbourne Airport. And then I'm like, hang on, we're at Avalon.
Yeah.
Like, when did this happen? So go to Avalon Airport. We're flying to Sydney and the plane gets hit by lightning.
Yeah.
And it's like,
oh, wow.
What kind of omen is this for the tournament? Yeah. Like, how
Gotta ask David Crowe about that one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Crowe would have handled that really well.
Yeah. Like, and Warren Brown, like, wakes up and's like, oh, what's happened?
Yeah,
and
he was asleep.
No, you're good. Like, just go back to sleep. But this is the stuff that, you know, basketball brings that I think a lot of people forget about.
Yeah.
Is that, yes, the on-court stuff matters. Don't get me wrong. Still coach the kids, still trying to get everyone better. All that sort of absolutely matters. But the off-court stuff is just such a massive part of it. And surrounding yourself with the right people that you can have fun with, that you can enjoy it with, that is just such a big part of it.
Oh, absolutely. And look, I'm huge when it comes to that. Yeah. I think one thing that was a big shock to me when I got involved with Al year before that is how much his staff was doing in between the games. And while I think that is really important, I thought, like, we can't do this. You know, that's one thing that I wanted to do, is like reduce that load, even though that was pretty hard when it comes to Crowe, who wants to do
the old war room.
Yeah. Yep.
I still haven't thawed out from sitting underneath that air conditioner when we were in Queensland. we had one room and it was set up like Crowe's, you know, different when it comes to nationals. Like, he's like very particular on that thing, and I want this set up here. And it's like, yeah, cool, mate.
Yeah.
He's like, you've got that spot over in the corner. I'm like, yeah, all right, no worries. And I look up and there's this air conditioning unit that is sitting directly above me.
The new guy.
Yeah. It's like, thanks, guys. Crowe was not a big fan of the Queensland weather at that point, where it was just too hot. So he's like, that thing goes all day, every day. I'm like, and I've got to code this game underneath that. And he's like, yep.
Yeah.
Like, all right, cool. This is what we're doing. No worries. And like, the amount of times I just walk out on the balcony and just get some sun just to de-thaw. But it was, yeah, it was fun time.
No, it was fun. Like I said, like, just going back to what I said before, I just wanted to make sure that we had fun, you know, doing this. And I think that was the case. You know, less is more. I'm huge on focusing on us. And if anything, we needed to, you know, cut more tape and do more stuff on us. But having fun, enjoying it, having some free time, and having you guys being part of the training, I'm pretty sure all our staff went to training sessions as well. We didn't have people staying home. Great memories. I was only there for about 5 years altogether, I think. But I love Vic Metro, still do. I'm glad that David and Nick are still involved with the program, who I've coached in the past. Darren Best was involved in the program as well, who is also one of my ex-players.
We're all on that same youth league team.
That's right.
I think I bring it up every 2 weeks, but anyway.
Roughly. You do always qualify with, I didn't play much.
Yeah, like, I did. You do give but that. Still, greatest team I've ever been on. So,
2007, Nick played quite a bit. Had a game winner. Did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Have you not brought that
up? How did I not remember that? And just then.
I remember that.
True. Yeah, it does.
But 2006, we had Nick, Mihai, Dave Peters, and Darren Best on the team.
Mm.
So
crazy how it happens, isn't it? Like, it is a small basketball world, ultimately. Like, it's amazing how many people. And in particular, like, you think about that era, like Melbourne Tigers was the central piece of Victorian basketball for so long. It makes sense that so many people have come through this pipeline effectively here. Like, it's, you think about players that have gone on to achieve things, coaches that have gone on. Almost all of them have spent time at Melbourne Tigers in some capacity, whether it be juniors, seniors, or somewhere in between. And obviously the NBL program had a lot to do with that at the time and those sorts of things too. Yeah. But yeah, there's just so many people that came through here.
Oh, absolutely. And look, back in the day, like you just mentioned it before, having an NBL team obviously played a huge role in a boys' program.
Yep.
And when we had a WNBL team as well with the girls' program. So a lot of juniors would say, like, I want to play for Tigers because they've got that pathway to the NBL.
Yep.
But I also think that there is a beauty in Victorian basketball past that era where other clubs have gotten stronger and now the competition is more spread around, which is really good for basketball. So, you know, I can't say that the Melbourne is the same powerhouse that was 30 years ago. Probably not, but we are still up there.
Still very good, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's more challenging, which is what you really want.
Yep.
So, no, look, basketball in this state and in the country is going, you know, places. There's so many kids that are involved in the game. And because of those kids wanting to be involved in a game, the competition is stronger. The competition is more challenging for everyone, coaches and players.
Yeah, definitely.
So just fantastic to see how much some other clubs have grown and improved over the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's great to see.
Yeah, there's tons of out there. Is there any coaching advice to others that you've got out in the wilderness? Like, obviously, the don't skip steps is a massive part of it. But is there anything else that you think would actually help coaches in their pathway with what they're looking for?
One thing is that you have to have mentors and you have to spend time working and talking and listening to someone who has more experience, who's been there, who's done that. Again, I work with a lot of coaches. That's my role today. I oversee the girls and the boys program. So I work with all our junior coaches and I still am struggling to pass that message. Go and watch what more experienced coaches do. Go and see how they communicate with players. Go and see how they explain a drill. Go and ask him for a copy of their session plan. If I can give any advice, that would be the first advice to any beginner coach, intermediate coach, coaches that want to go to the next level. Try to get yourself surrounded with people who know more, who have been there before. That's the first message I would give to any coach.
I really like that. It's poignant. Especially given where you are at the moment in this Melbourne Tiger space, like that's a very strong tip of the cap, I suppose, to where you came from as well. Like, you know, you said it before, you did hours of just watching practice and learning how to best communicate. And I think now with such a different generation of player coming through, how we communicate continually changes. So that's like, it's more about how you deliver the message now than what the message actually is. In a lot of cases, with our young kids in particular, and obviously with our young coaches as well, that's a different era again.
Yes.
Coming through and how they take on board feedback and do they want to listen to it? Do they not want to listen to it? You know, is it the right thing to say now, but will that necessarily make you better later? Like all those things sort of come into it. And it's, I think the hardest part, and you touched on it before, of course, is, you know, the quick fix versus the long-term payoff. There are so many people that chase that quick fix. And I want to be good now and I need the information to make me better now. And it's like, yeah, but you got to do some growing to get to that point. And
yeah.
I mean, it's telling, like you mentioned before, you'd coached roughly, I want to say off the top of my head, around about 15 to 20 years before you were involved in the Vic Metro program.
Yep.
You got there and then you learned.
Yep.
Like, that's part of it.
Yeah. And then I went to work with Guy Malloy with the national team.
Yep.
And I learned.
Yep.
you know, like I said, I am still learning.
Yep.
The other message for coaches is like, don't be scared to say, I don't know, or I'm not sure. I think that's the biggest challenge in today's world for some reason.
Big time. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Like, maybe they're like, oh, I'd like to go and speak to the coach, but, yep. You know, if I do, they're going to think that I'm not ready or I don't know what I'm doing.
Mm.
Like, it's the opposite, right? Like, all senior coaches, more experienced coaches love chatting hoops. Yep. So if you're a young coach, it doesn't have to be a young coach. Even if you're coaching a junior level team and you have some other coaches with more experience at the club, go and talk to them. Just ask for feedback. You know, show them your session plan. Tell them about what your plan is for the next 3 months and just get different opinion. I always do that.
Yep.
I love doing that. Like, I remember even doing Vic Metro session plans, I would share it with coaches and say, hey, edit, put feedback in there. If I'm running camps or clinics for the coaches now, I run that past, you know, a few people at the club. Like, I think it's a really, really important thing to do. But for some reason, we just don't have enough of those who do that.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a big one, right? Like, I've found that as well, that we find coaches would rather go, yep, I know it, and then Google it later.
Yeah.
You know, then say genuinely, I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm.
Going back to your mentor thing, because I 100% agree with that as well. Sometimes that's as simple as, you know, a 20-minute phone conversation while you're driving to work.
Oh, absolutely. It's the best time to do it.
And you just talk about nothing, just about basketball, and then something pops up and you're like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even need to be, we need to talk about this. Yep. Just having that open conversation gets it going. Yeah.
And it's amazing how many good ideas come from those chats. Mm. Like, and even, like, obviously I talk to a lot of coaches, I don't want to say below me, but they're still developing their craft as a coach. They have less experience than I do. And the amount of times I'll talk to them, they'll say something and it'll trigger something in me, and it's like, oh, I've never thought of it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's actually a really cool way to look at it, or you package it differently to how I probably would have done that. That's actually cool. I want to go away and think about this a little bit more, and then I can come back to them after a couple of days and say, actually, I've thought a bit more about this. This is what I think.
Yeah.
Like, those types of things. So
no, absolutely.
Don't feel like you're an imposition in that space. Like, it's a gift. Like, the fact that people want to call you as a coach and get your advice on things, that's a gift for you. Like, as the person receiving that phone call. So it's a big thing.
Yeah. Like I'll just use one example. Yeah. Andrew Gaze.
Yep.
Legend of the game, right? He would still every now and then sit down and say, hey, what do you think about this?
Yep.
Like, you know, it's nothing wrong with doing that.
Yep.
If you want to get better, if you want to make sure you're doing the right thing, just ask, sit down and talk. There's so many options for mentors out there. Use it. Yep. So that would be the main one that I would pass on to coaches. Yep. Like, please go and talk to more experienced coaches. Show them what you're doing. And and no one's going to think of you as, they don't know what they're talking about.
No,
they're
no,
coming
no.
and asking for help. It's not like that.
No, we gives don't you more look credit, at
it.
If anything.
It gives you more credit, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I really like it. Nick, we'll wind this up here. It's been just over an hour as we go through. I feel like I'd do this for another hour and a half comfortably. Yeah. But like, thank you very much for jumping on the podcast. And like, very sincerely, thank you for everything you've done for Victorian basketball. Like, it's, you are literally sitting across from two guys that you've helped immensely. Dave Peters, who you've obviously spoken about previously, that's in the role that he is. Bestie, that was in that role before him. Zoe, like, it's, there are very few people that come to me and say, hey, I want to do individual, or I need extra training. Who can I go to? It's like, are you around the Melbourne area? And it is usually like, go talk to Nick. Mm-hmm. Like, there are very few individual trainers that I would endorse, but you are very much top of the tree when that comes to that. So from my end, thank you for everything you've done for me, but also for everyone else in Victorian basketball. Mammoth, like 25 years at the association, and obviously a lot before that, is huge. So thank you very much for jumping in the podcast, and we look forward to seeing what comes next for you as well.
No, thank you guys for having me, and thanks for your kind words, Robbie. Look, it's a pleasure being on here today. I love it. Love talking hoops in general. I don't feel like I have helped that many people in basketball. It's never been I've never looked at it from that angle, but obviously, you know, you guys did the same for me. Like I said before, I've learned from every player, every assistant coach, every development play coach, every single person that I work with. So that's what this is all about: us helping each other and yeah, getting places. So thank you very much for having me.
Huge thanks to Nick for jumping in on that one. Both Nicks for jumping in on that one, but Nick Abdusevich in particular for jumping in on the podcast with that one. Great to hear from someone that probably doesn't get a lot of credit around the place either. Unless you're a Melbourne Tigers faithful, you probably don't know a lot about Nick. Hopefully you know a little bit more now. But in particular, his views on coaching and how he's gone about it throughout his career as well, and just the amount of work that he's put into his own craft as a coach is one of the things that I think goes unnoticed a lot. And, you know, when we talk best coaches in Victoria and best coaches in Australia, he's very much at the top of our tree when we look at it from the amount of work and effort that he's put in, not only to the sport as a whole, but to those that have been around him in that pathway as well. You know, I was really fortunate to have assisted Nick in one of his years as a state team coach, and you know, the amount I learned from him was incredible. And you know, for mine, he was a big part on shaping me as a coach, and I think it's fantastic that he talks about it as well, was that, you know, surround yourself with good people, go and watch training sessions, go and watch games, listen to how people communicate. This is such a valuable message to coaches, I think, over the course. And you know, I would recommend go back and have a listen to that again, because there are so many little drops in there that I think can really help people with their coaching. So huge thanks once again to Nick for jumping in. That does wrap us up for the calendar year of Talking Split on this one. Thanks everyone that has continued to listen throughout the place. It's, I'd say it with no word of a lie, it's a genuinely humbling experience when you go out to place and they say, oh, listen to the podcast, to the point where the socially awkward side of Rob, of course, doesn't naturally know how to respond to that. It's like, oh, good. And it comes across a little flippant, but it's not that. It does mean a lot that people continue to listen, that people continue to send in things like coach shout-outs, book reviews, you know, just speak positively about the podcast. It is a very humbling experience. So we do appreciate everyone that listens to that. We will be back again next year. A couple of different things in store for next year. We'll see how this shakes out, but a few different things that we've got planned for next year. The podcast won't be going anywhere, though, so that will definitely be back. Coaches, enjoy what little break you might be getting over the course here as the seasons wind down, but then individuals start up and preparations for tournaments start up. It's get a break while you can. Get some time away from the sport. Get some time away from coaching. If you want to invest in yourself and start looking for some PD, this is a good time to do it while you're not doing anything else. You know, really enjoy the break, though, and enjoy the downtime while you've got it, because as we know, when basketball's back, it's very much back. We'll be back again next year on the podcast. Coach Wellbeing Month isn't just a month. Feel free to continue some of those habits over the course of the summer break as well, and we'll catch everyone again next year.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.